Funding for this podcast comes from MathWorks, creators of MATLAB and Simulink software, accelerating the pace of engineering and science. Learn more at MathWorks.com.
This is Radio Boston. I'm Deborah Becker. Tonight, Governor Charlie Baker delivers his first State of the Commonwealth address. Here's the governor giving a preview of his speech.
I'm going to talk about some of the concerns we have with respect to making sure we can continue to make progress on the energy front. I'm going to talk about opioids. We're making progress there, but we have a long way to go.
Joining us in studio to talk about the governor's address and to look at some other issues facing Massachusetts is Congressman Richard Neal. He's dean of the New England Congressional Delegation. He represents Massachusetts' first congressional district, which covers parts of Western Mass, including Springfield, Pittsfield, and Holyoke. Congressman Neal will be at tonight's State of the Commonwealth address. Welcome back to Radio Boston.
Thank you for the forum.
Well, first, I want to talk about the governor's speech tonight. Governor Baker says among the topics he's going to be talking about opioids, a problem affecting every part of the state. And earlier this month, I think there were 8 overdose deaths in 1 week in Springfield, which is in your district, because of a particularly deadly batch of heroin. What does the state need to do first, I guess, to try to deal with this?
Well, there's going to have to be a combination, I think, of prevention and enforcement, not to miss the point that as prescription medications, OxyContin and others, have become very costly, that heroin is now being sold on the streets of Hartford, parts of Springfield, for $2.50 a bag.
Sometimes given away for free, we're told.
It's extraordinary what's happened. And it is the argument of supply and demand, not to miss that point. But at the same time, I think that the governor is correct, as President Obama was last week in his opening comments to in the State of the Union address, to emphasize the notion of more assistance from the federal government, not just in terms of law enforcement, although that's important, but also in terms of education, prevention, mental health opportunities, and more beds for those who find themselves in dire need. Everybody, Deb, has a family member, a neighbor, or somebody they know who now has this problem. Right. It's extraordinary.
You probably heard former Congressman Patrick Kennedy, Rhode Island. He was a congressman in Rhode Island, and he said, yes, he realizes that the presidential campaign, the presidential candidates are on the campaign trail talking about their personal stories, how they've been affected by substance use, but he feels that he's not getting a lot of concrete ideas from these folks. I think the quote from him was, I don't want to hear a storyteller in chief. I want somebody who's going to take some concrete action. What can the government do? What concrete action do you think the government can do? And also what I'm wondering is, because this continues to spiral and the numbers continue to really become astronomical in terms of deaths from overdoses, should the federal government take the role of looking into what is the most effective way to treat folks with substance use disorder and figure out how to do that?
Well, I would say, in reference to Pat Kennedy's comments, Secretary Clinton did lay out a plan at the Manchester Union Leader during an interview for a $10 billion investment across the country in those very issues of prevention, law enforcement, and also additional mental health assistance and more beds. Now, Senator Markey and I have filed, based upon the success of the Massachusetts law, a federal initiative for the Good Samaritan rule, which would protect from legal exposure those first responders who administer Narcan. So I think that those are a series of steps.
So basically,
that we could
if someone brings someone in for medical attention, they won't get charged.
They will not be charged. And I would just call your attention to this unbelievable film that Markey and I previewed with members of Congress last week, Heroin on Cape Cod.
The HBO documentary.
Right. And, and in speaking to the producer, I was asking about a young woman who I thought for sure in the movie was going to make it based upon her early comments. And she said to me afterwards, let me tell you what happened to her. She died 2 days after her boyfriend got out of jail. And she argued or alleged that he left her when she overdosed. And I think those are the kinds of things. If somebody had come to her assistance or she had been taken to an emergency facility, perhaps she'd still be alive.
Right, right. There are all kinds of stories. But you do say beds, but I'm wondering, sometimes there are folks who believe that, there have been folks that we've spoken with who say beds aren't the only answer, and we have to know what kinds of beds we need exactly and which ones work.
There was a physician in Franklin County who participated with the U.S. attorney and myself and members of the law enforcement community at the federal courthouse in Springfield about a year ago. in a panel discussion in which she said, I never thought I would ever say this, but she said the surest route to treatment is incarceration. Hmm. She said, because you know there that they are going to dry out. And she said, I regret very much having to say that, but she said, based on your question about beds and availability of services, she said, once that happens, she said, I know that in some shape or form, they're going to get treatment.
Hmm. Well, that's probably something that we'll debate another time, but let's move on to other topics, because the governor also is going to talk about energy tonight, he says. And so I want to ask you about the proposed Kinder Morgan pipeline extension that would run through part of your district. There's been some opposition from communities in the district. What's your take on the pipeline now and how it might fit into the state's energy plans?
Well, I think that part of the problem here is the way that Kinder Morgan has handled it. And I think that they have been very abrasive in their public presentations. We all acknowledge that there is a capacity challenge that we have in western Massachusetts. There are those who have proposed rerouting the pipeline, which mm-hmm. I think might have some audience. And at the same time, we also, I think, have to address the following issue. Siting any sort of a facility today anywhere, even those who advocate, for example, for greener energy and alternative sources of energy, they tend to resist the siting of any controversial facilities. So when you suggest that you might need turbines in some of the smaller towns in my constituency, locals resist the construction of a turbine. Mm-hmm. And on the wind issue, because I do tax work every day, without the wind production credit, it's very hard to see how wind works. And it's the federal tax code, it's state tax incentives that actually make these opportunities for alternative energy more viable. And I think you now have an argument that is very controversial as it relates to siting. So there are, the president says all of the above. And I think sometimes the advocates say only one or two of the above.
Mm-hmm. I see. So at this point, it's still sort of in debate.
We have been in discussion with federal authorities on it, and we've had that conversation, had them in, spoke to them, raised all of the questions that the citizenry has raised across western and central Massachusetts. I believe Governor Baker's an ally on this issue as well, and they are now still proceeding. As early as headlines in the Springfield paper this morning, with some controversy, as they are arguing with access to private property across that part of the state in an effort for them to proceed with the pipeline.
You know, you mentioned taxes and your knowledge of taxes, which is extensive because you've been on the Ways and Means Committee for a very long time. So you probably know quite a bit about the nation's tax code. But I want to ask you about something that we spoke about on our show just yesterday, and that is the record of General Electric and taxes. Because as you know, GE is relocating its headquarters from Fairfield, Connecticut to Boston. And the New York Times, we had the New York Times, former New York Times journalist on, who wrote a story back in 2010 and 2011 looking at GE's tax record, which showed really that GE, as a corporation, was able to use some sophisticated accounting and find loopholes and pay a very small percentage of its profits in taxes. What do you think Massachusetts should do to prevent the company from paying, from trying to do that here? Because already, seemingly, the state and the city of Boston are offering a lot of incentives for GE to come here.
On the federal level, the last time that we did fundamental tax reform was in 1986. And this is not to apologize for those who take advantage of it, as much as it is to point out that the current tax code in America ill serves the American citizenry. When you consider that a company like GE, much of their business is really international now. They have as many employees across the globe as they would have here in America, if not more. Tax departments across the country are very sophisticated. And what they do is they take advantage of exclusions in the code, preferences in the code, or deductions in the code. If the law says it's permissible, they do it. And trying to shut down some of the more abusive parts of tax avoidance has been very difficult.
Mm-hmm. So what do you do? I mean, is there nothing you can do then? Because
we need to have the presidential candidates speak forcefully to the issue of what a tax code ought to look like in 2016. And they ought to debate it. We ought to spend time with the two finalists. Even now, they should be asked questions about the tax code. Nobody that I've seen as they move along is ever asked a question about the tax code. Mm-hmm. We're always asked a question about the bombast. Right. We're always asked a question about the conflict. But very few times is anybody asked to offer an in-depth discussion of what a tax code might look like in a new time. Example, we're one of the only countries in the world that embraces a tax system that taxes foreign-sourced income there and then if the money is brought back. So as you and I speak, Deb, here in Boston, there is sitting offshore more than $2 trillion of money that sits there because it is not returned for productive purposes. And part of that argument is over what even President Obama has said is a tax code that is uncompetitive internationally. And he proposed 28%. Of course, the Republicans went to 25%. And the current tax exposure is about 36.5% on the high end. So we all acknowledge that the tax code is not competitive, but not to miss the point that in that tax code, there is a constituency for every exclusion, deduction, and preference. And overcoming that really should be the fundamental challenge of making America internationally competitive or keeping us internationally competitive.
I want to ask you about something else that's rather complicated, and that is a bill that would affect investment industry practices because this was written about in the Berkshire Eagle and recently in the Boston Globe as well. Now, the Obama administration proposed regulations about potential conflicts of interest on the part of investment brokers. The White House, estimates that Americans lose, $17 billion a year because they receive what the White House calls conflicted advice from brokers who may not be steering them into products that are in the best interest of the investor, but really in the best interest of the broker. So some say that the legislation that you've proposed regarding this is watered down, and this legislation waters down the White House regulations to crack down on this, and that this legislation could be affected by Mass Mutual, which is in your district, major company in your district, and the largest source.
Much smaller than GE, by the way.
It is smaller than but it's billions of dollars in retirement accounts, right, managed by Mass Mutual, and the largest source of campaign money to you, according to the Globe. So explain this legislation and explain what's your response to folks who say, hey, is this questionable, Congressman?
The issue here is not Mass Mutual. Mm-hmm. It is not campaign contributions. The issue here is making sure that middle-income people receive the advice that they're going to need. Now, my children will never know what a defined benefit retirement plan will look like. Mm-hmm. Instead, most people today have a defined contribution plan.
Right.
And as we've watched the stock market tank by 1,500 points since the first of the year, we're reminded of the advice that people are going to need because they're going to be in charge of their own retirement. So my history. The auto IRA is my proposal. The opt-out provision, my proposal. I have spent a career trying to raise the limits on individual retirement accounts. I've spent a career trying to make sure that people have the opportunity to set aside prescribed number of dollars and defended Social Security more vigorously than anybody else, perhaps in the House of Representatives. Retirement should be a three-legged stool. Personal savings, a retirement plan, and the guarantee of Social Security. So on the first option, personal savings. This has been a very bad time for savers. Now more than 10 years, anybody who sets aside X number of dollars hoping that they would earn interest on it for retirement years, that is not occurring. You see in the advertising and publications, one-year CDs that are at 0.9%.
Mm.
And my argument here has been get advice to people who need it. And by the way, the Obama administration and I, we agree on three fundamental facets of it. Fiduciary first, or client first, transparency, and get rid of the bad actors.
Okay. Unfortunately, we're out of time, but I would love to talk with you further about this.
We should do a special just on retirement savings.
We should. Congressman Richard Neal represents the Massachusetts 1st District. Congressman Neal, thanks very much for
coming. Thank you, Deborah.